Blog Talk Radio.
Today we're going to speak with author Kevin Gerard, and we're going to talk about his series, Diago's Dragon, and it's a children's fantasy series. It's all about a dragon named Diago. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hello, Sherry.
How are you?
I am doing fine. It's the second sunny summer day in a row.
Yay! Yeah, it's clear and bright. We're both in San Diego, so we can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
Why, for people who weren't here last time, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and how you started writing the series?
Well, let's see. I use both sides of my brain equally because I teach statistics at Cal State San Marcos. And then on my off time, I write fantasy novels for kids. And I love teaching college because I get to hang around with college kids, but I love writing novels and meeting with, you know, children in middle school. And Diago's Dragon. Diago is a sixth grade middle school kid, and his dragon's name is Magnifico. And I'll tell you about that in a minute or two, but I bought a dragon statue at the Del Mar Fair, which has been renamed the San Diego County Fair, over 10 years ago, and eventually brought him to a middle school in Escondido and gave him away to a seventh grader named Jorge Ramirez. And about 3 months later, I thought, what a cool story that would be. So I kept Jorge's last name and changed his first name to Diago, and wrote a story about a kid who wins a writing contest in sixth grade and gets a dragon statue, and of course it breaks out of its shell and comes to life, and poof, Diago's Dragon was born, and I'm just started writing the fifth book in the series.
Wow. So you are... You said you use both parts of your brain. How do you feel about what's going on with education today? How do you bring the heart to education when they're trying to take it away by cutting the budget?
Yeah, they're cutting the budget everywhere, you know, K-12 for sure, but it's a battle at the Cal State University and University of California also. You know, I don't know. Both the kids in my series, you know, I wrote another one with a kid named Connor. They're good kids and they're smart kids, and their girlfriends are smart kids. I think I portray education in a positive light. So the parents of the kids in both series are very education-minded, and Diego's parents want him to do well, and they stay on top of him about that. And you're right about education. The things that I see at the college level are frightening. I guess I'll say it, that they just had graduation on May 19th. I couldn't go because I was down in Mexico at the time, but I'm all colleges. I just won't put it on Cal State, but colleges across the nation graduate students who really are not prepared to graduate or compete in the world, and that's a tragedy. It really is.
Don't you think it's odd that, you know, especially big business wants people to be, you know, competitive, and yet they're the same people who are behind cutting the budget, so the people who are coming into their businesses aren't up to par to be competitive because they're not being allowed to be. Don't you think that's weird?
It's way beyond weird. It really is a tragedy that they're allowing them to go out like that. But big business can get the people that they're looking for in a lot of different places. So, you know, they try to extend work visas, I think, if I understand that correctly from the news, so they can bring, you know, quote-unquote intelligent people in from other countries and have them work for them at a fraction of the cost of American workers. And, you know, just part of the many shenanigans that go on in the corporate world.
That's so sad.
I kind of gear my classes at State. I mean, it's statistics, but I still make the students write 3 papers a semester and just work them very, very hard on the simplest of technical writing skills so they can know where they are and try to improve, and hopefully that'll do something for them. Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
Something a little less depressing. You write fantasy, but what do you read? Do you read, what's your favorite genre, or do you have a favorite genre, and what authors do you like or and recommend?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I kind of fly all over the place with what I read. I'm reading books by a guy named John Sanford, S-A-N-D-F-O-R-D, right now. He writes kind of detective thrillers, I guess, and he created this character who's a detective called Virgil Flowers, and I'm on the 3rd book of that, and he's just a good writer, and he tells really good stories, and Virgil Flowers and his cohorts are, you know, they're fun guys to read about. So I'm into that now. I read 2 books. I think it was the first 2 books that a new author has written. Neil Abramson. He's an attorney. His wife is a veterinarian in real life. And he wrote 2 novels that, as soon as I get a formal bookshelf, his 2 hardcover novels are the first ones that are going up there.
Aww.
And, yeah, he wrote 2 books. One is called Just Life, and the other one, oh, man, I think it's called Friends, but I can't remember. So they're books about legal cases about animals or animal shelters or animals that are being worked on for medical science. And, man, they were such good stories. And then I jump into science fiction and then fantasy. But I will tell you that the greatest story I ever read was written by a woman named Margaret Weis, W-E-I-S, and it's a trilogy called The Star of the Guardians. And it's probably out of print, but you can find it certainly on online. And wow, what powerful characters in that story. And I was at a local convention in San Diego, and I started talking about it, and I gave away this huge, you know, plot action, and everybody in the audience just went, oh. So I'll be careful not to do that again.
Yeah, you have to go, spoilers, everybody doesn't want to leave the room.
Yeah, so they can plug their ears.
A warning, at least.
Yeah, you know, it really comes down to, I don't really care about the genre. I've read nonfiction also, but if it's a gripping book by an author, then I like it. I have a very good friend who owns a publishing company up in L.A. County, and she is an author that wrote a book called Black Widow Bitches, and it is about, it's awesome. It's about the first all-female airborne combat division in World War III, and the enemy forces are the ones that named them the Black Widow Bitches. And oh my God, it was such a great book. It was over 800 pages long, but I just loved it.
Do you think that, because one of the things that makes me a little sad is, you know, some kids today are sort of proud that they don't read. I don't really even understand it, but they're into games, or they're into some other stuff that is like online stuff. I don't really understand. How do we track people back to reading a good book, whether it's an e-book or it's a regular book? How is it? I mean, like, Harry Potter was a phenomenon. All these kids were running to get it. What was the secret that did that we could do more and more of, that could bring more and more kids to running to the bookstore to buy it?
I'll tell you the secret. In my opinion, J.K. Rowling wrote a story about something that she absolutely loved, and that's why Harry Potter came out to be the phenomenon it is. And I think that is the job of all authors, to write what you love, and that is what I've done. I've written a couple of other books for adults about subjects that I really love, but writing for kids and fantasy is my first love. Now let me tell you a little story about Diego's Dragon. Right, this is a Hispanic boy who's the star of the story, but 90% of the characters in the whole series are Hispanic. And on a lark, I had the first book translated into Spanish. And through about 6 degrees of separation, I managed to donate 50 copies to a library in Rosarito Beach in Mexico. And the same thing that happened with all the kids in America with Harry Potter happened down there with Diego's Dragon.
Oh, how great.
Oh, my God. These kids went completely insane. I had forgotten about it for over a year after I donated. And the director of the library wrote me an email and said, just wanted to tell you that the kids love Diego's Dragon so much that they checked all the books out, and none of them are bringing them back. So, yeah. So they ended up making
a
dragon.
Oh, that's a compliment in a kind of perverse way.
That's exactly what I wrote back, you know. I hate to say that's really great, but so they made it a six-week program for all the kids, and, you know, libraries in that little district down in Rosarito Beach that had never seen a kid come into the library, all of a sudden were flooded with kids every day screaming for Diego's Dragon. They all wanted to read it. They all wanted to be part of this program. They all made papier-mâché dragons. And I was invited down there on May 20th to speak to all these kids, and I got told by so many people, you know, you have created an environment where these kids want to read. They are dying to read. So, wow, what a super compliment that is.
That is really cool. Well, congratulations. That's amazing.
Hey, yeah, it really is. So, consequently, the second book is being translated.
That's wonderful. And so you're going to donate again?
I don't know. I think I'll send one copy down there for sure, just to let them get a taste of it. And then, I mean, I think they ended up buying like 175 books because the program got so many kids that wanted to be a part of it. And I gave them all the books for half price, you know, half retail price. And they certainly appreciated that, so I think I'll do that again, and that'll be fine for them.
That's great. You said you read a lot of nonfiction. I'm really into nonfiction as well as fiction. I also like to watch a lot of documentaries. Do you get inspired when you're, it's weird, I can watch a documentary and I'll like sit up and I'm going, I freeze it, run to my room, get a notebook and start scribbling something, and then I unfreeze it to watch the rest because something in it will spark my interest. Do you ever do that?
I never stop something to take notes, but, you know, if something gets in my mind, it doesn't leave. You know, it keeps swirling around and coming back to the forefront. you know, of my mind, and I'll never stop thinking about it. When I gave the Jorge the dragon statue way back when, I can't even remember when it was, 2009 maybe, you know, the thought just kept coming back around in my mind after a few months that, you know what, you got to sit down and start writing this story. And the greatest thing about kids' fantasy is that anything goes. There are no rules. So I watch documentaries too, as a matter of fact. There's quite a few of them on Netflix. I just checked out the original three Star Wars movies from the library, and it had an extra DVD in there about the making of all three of the movies, you know, kind of a documentary. Mm-hmm. And it was just fascinating. You know, everything
that
George Lucas went through.
Rod Roddenberry's thing about his dad, Gene Roddenberry.
I haven't watched that, but I watched. Go ahead.
Oh no, it's a documentary that he did in search of his father, and he said he wasn't really into Star Trek; he was into Star Wars.
Huh.
He's the son of Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
And one of the people he interviewed was George Lucas. And it was really fascinating because actually George Lucas was a huge Star Trek fan. So it was all like this huge circle.
Yeah. What did I watch? Leonard Nimoy's son made a documentary about Leonard Nimoy. Also very fascinating. I think I'll watch out for that Gene Roddenberry one. But... you know, when Leonard Nimoy died, I put a big thing in my newsletter about the fact that Mr. Spock had died, because that's who it was for me. You know, he was so real. He made that character so real that Mr. Spock died. You know, I have a thing right on my desk. I've had it on there for years. A picture of Mr. Spock and my own little sentences down below that says, "It is logical to strive, illogical to flounder." So I've been striving since 2004.
Yeah, I love Leonard Nimoy. I saw him in person at a couple of conventions, and he's always he was always fascinating to watch, to coin a phrase. But he is, like, so supportive. I remember when the new Star Trek came out, and he came up with Quinton, what's his name? The guy who plays Spock in the new series.
Quinto. Jeremy Jackson. Jeremy Quinto?
I think so. I think
something around.
Fans out there.
Zachary Quinto, that's it.
Zachary. Yeah. And they were on the stage together, and it was like father and son. It was just adorable.
Yeah.
He's so supportive of him. But that was him. He was so cool. Yeah, he's quite the loss. Quite a loss.
Yeah.
Was Star Trek an inspiration to you growing up, and was there any other TV shows that sparked your interest in science fiction and fantasy?
Star Trek must have been an inspiration. I remember watching it when I was a kid, but it hadn't really become the phenomenon that it is today, or it was even 30 years ago at that point. But I'll tell you what, I went down to the Space Theater in La Jolla, Balboa Park, when they had the Star Trek display, show, whatever you want to call it. And they had this one big room with a timeline that, you know, started with the original series and then the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and all these things. And I realized, walking through that room and looking at all the displays and all the movies too, that, you know, Star Trek had been a part of my life since I was 5 years old, or something pretty close to that. So that huge influence.
Very, very important.
And it's so funny to watch the original series now, because I talked to this guy at school one time, and he said, you know, the Next Generation is okay, but I miss all the fights that they used to get into in the original show. And then you watch the fights now in the original series. They're so hokey.
I know. I know.
stand-in doubles. They don't look anything like them.
But it's the 60s, so you got to give them some slack there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you're a kid, it didn't look hokey at all.
Oh, I know. There was this show when I was a little girl. I must have been 5, but I always remembered it because it was a female superhero, Isis. And nobody else I ever talked about remembered the show. I mean, it really drove me crazy. And it's like Isis was about the Egyptian goddess. And the girl was an archaeologist, and she found a necklace. And when she put the necklace on and she said Isis, she became Isis.
Huh.
And it was part of the Captain America series, but I never watched that. I only watched Isis. I was a very... Because archaeology and a super empowered girl and teaching lessons was all, like, right up my street. So I found a video at a convention of it. And I was so excited, and it's got this beautiful cover, and I brought it home, and I started watching it, and I was like, okay, now I know why it was on Saturday mornings. I mean, it was so corny, but that's not my memory of it.
Yeah. Well, they actually have the original He-Man cartoons on Netflix, and I watch those sometimes because I used to watch them whenever they came out. And, you know, talk about hokey, but for some reason I just liked it. You know, he has his cringer cat who turns into Battle Cat when he points the sword at him. And it's just stupid, but I like it. And somebody comes out at the end of every cartoon and gives the kids a little message about life.
Yeah.
You know, which of course you're not supposed to do in books, but... You know, you name any movie or any book, and I'll tell you the message that they're trying to give. So.
And that was the other thing. There was always a lesson in every episode of Isis. It was like, and they made sure they pointed it out like 3 or 4 times to make sure the lesson, whatever it was driven home.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, though. You're right
very
about kids and games and stuff. I mean, unless they have a book to read that really is going to just hook them and grab their attention and pull them away from that game, then they're not going to go for it. So, and I'm somewhat guilty of that myself because I have that Halo game on my computer, and especially when I have a stack of papers to grade for school. You know, I play a little game with myself, and if I grade 10 papers, then I can play Halo for 20 minutes, and then I go back and grade 10 more. So,
we never grow up.
No way.
Okay, we only have about 10 minutes, so I want to give you plenty of time. I want you to talk about your new book. And where they can get it, and if you have any events coming up that you're going to be signing or anything, or any online events that you have coming up, the floor is yours.
Well, let's see. The first Diego's Dragon book is called Spirits of the Sun, and all of those books have some aspect of Hispanic culture and or history. About them, attached to them, whatever you want to say. So the sun is very prevalent in Mexican and Aztec history, and the spirits of the sun are something that you'll just have to read the book to find out about, because I don't want to give it away. And the second book is Dragons of the Dark Rift, and that is about the Mayan calendar, which was going to destroy the world, or actually the end of the calendar, in 2012, and the third book is about the conquistadors, the Spanish, coming to the Aztec nation in the 16th century, and Diego and his friends and all their dragons going back 500 years in the past and trying to stop them. And the fourth book is kind of a continuation of the third book because, you know, of course, the giant cliffhanger is at the end of the third one. And the fifth one has to do with a really wonderful celebration called Day of the Dead, or Dia de los Muertos, because of something that happened in the fourth book, which of course I can't tell you about either, but the only way I can continue the story is to find some way that somebody can come back through that Day of the Dead celebration and torment Diego a little more. So that'll take me who knows how long to write, maybe into next summer, you know, unless I really get clicking because I'm writing another book at the same time. And I don't really have any events, you know, officially coming up right now. I think the books are available at, where are they available? Mysterious Galaxy, they are. Or you can find them online, or you can certainly go to the diegosdragon.com website and to buy them there.
And the last question is something I asked my guests. I've asked it before. I think I didn't ask it of you, so I'm going to ask it. What is your great passion in life?
Oh, wow. My great passion in life is to, seriously, the short answer is animals.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteer to walk German Shepherds on weekday mornings. They're at a rescue, and it's the only time they get out. Someday, if I ever truly make it as an author, I'm going to go get, 50 acres, let's say, somewhere that's all grassy grass, and get a bunch of dogs and cats and goats and anything else I can think of, and just live with animals, because I think they have it over people by a long shot. How's
You're
that?
The Doris Day of authors.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what Doris did. She left Beverly Hills because they said that she had too many dogs, and she moved to Carmel. So
wow.
She could have as many as she wanted. And she actually has a pet hotel for dogs and cats in Carmel, too.
There we go. Well, there was the woman who starred in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, Tippi Hedren.
Tippi Hedren.
She left Hollywood and moved. She has kind of a reserve,
mm-hmm.
really, for, I guess, any kind of animal, but definitely, wild animals.
With retired show business animals, like lions and stuff, because
yeah.
they kind of, like, shipped them off to places that weren't treating them very well. And then now she takes anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and she had a guy I read about quite a while when I read it, that he became the elephant keeper, and he would show up every day, never ask for anything, and take the elephants out for a walk and feed them and wash them, and elephants spawn just like any other animal, so
mm-hmm.
they were cool with him.
That's really beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it's very beautiful. I have my two little cats, Jesse and Jelly, and they are my life. Someday, I just want to have enough place for animals to run, and we can just have a blast.
Yeah, I lost my kitty. She died on my birthday.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. I still have been, replace her. I go, no, she's not replaceable. When I'm ready, I'll get a new cat. But right now, it's like losing, I've had a lot of losses here. But you can't replace a cat. It's she was one of a kind. There's no one else that's going to be like her, I'm sure you feel that
true.
Way about yours, too.
Yeah, any dog that I've ever, been around or, my cat's here, I don't know if I could ever get the same kind. Jesse's an orange tabby. He's the coolest cat in the world, and he just loves me more than anything. I don't think I could ever get another orange tabby. So I understand completely.
Yeah. It's time to replace. No, it's not time to replace her. Okay. She's
yeah.
innocent. Yeah. Yeah.
But
just
go somewhere where they have cats for adoption, and you never know when you're going to walk into a Petco or a PetSmart and see one, and just heart's going to break, and you'll do the right thing for both of you.
Yeah, I'm just waiting. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's been a tough year for me. We're at the end of the show. Do you have anything else you want to add about, any of your books or anything that you have that you want to say? Any little last message?
Yeah, I just want to tell everybody in the world, you know, kids and adults alike, that if you have a dream, chase it with everything you have, and don't let anybody tell you that you're being a fool for doing so. Because J.K. Rowling chased her dream, and look what happened. And Bill Gates chased his dream, and Stephen King chased his dream, and, you know, they were fortunate enough to grab it. And if I'm on my deathbed 20 or 30 years from now, and I have not grabbed, you know, gotten a hold of my dream, that is perfectly okay, because I have a dream, and I'm chasing it, and that is what life is all about, in my opinion.
Absolutely true. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always like talking to you.
Thanks, Kevin. And thank you for chatting. Thank you for chatting, Sherry.
Okay, Sherry. Bye-bye.